Welcome to the Listening Show. It's a show that you can listen to, and I'd like to thank you for joining us, little piggies.
I knew you were going to say little piggies. What else could you have said?
After little precious piggies, little piglets.
Little precious baby biscuits.
Our precious little boy.
Bunyan baskets.
My sweet, tiny little head boy. Your head is small. Okay.
Listeningers, of course.
Yeah.
You sweet little listeners.
Sweet little listening piggies. They went to the market. They went home.
What did the little piggies do? I don't remember.
This little piggy went to the market. This little piggy had none.
I can't remember. And I certainly can't remember which toe was which piggy.
This little piggy went to the market. This little piggy went home. This little piggy had roast beef. This little piggy had none. This little piggy went
all the way home. Remember that, like
wee wee wee.
Tickles you all the way up. I think that's how it was. Yeah. How it was supposed to go.
I learned another I didn't learn it. I heard another variation of it recently because our friend Laura was like, she brought up little piggy or whatever, and then she sang a different version. And then I was like, what the heck are you? What is that? And it was also funny.
What's wrong?
But it wasn't the right one. And then she was like, but listen. And then she pulled up this old YouTube video that was like, this little pig. And it was like a kid's song. A
different variation of.
Well, it was the original. And then there was more verses. I didn't know that was a multi-tiered song, you know?
It's wrong. It's like heresy. It's like someone quoting a verse in the Bible I didn't know was there.
Exactly. Like, it was like learning that Come Thou Fount isn't just one verse. It's like seven verses of different lyrics. And like, or Amazing Grace, like there's more verses to those. It's not just
you mean the song isn't just Amazing Grace,
right?
How sweet the sound. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's what people sing is the Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound. Save a wretch like me. I once was lost, but I'm found. Now I see. But there's way more than that.
Oh, yeah.
There's like way more. And I didn't know that for a while because like in church, if you ever sang that song, it would just be that little verse, and then they'd be done with it.
Why do you think that is?
Lazy.
Well, usually, you know, like in church songs, it's like a verse or two or three that go over and over, and then there's a bridge, and that's it. They're pretty simple. It's not like a bunch of different lyrics. It's a few lyrics over and over.
Yep.
Why do you think that is?
Especially in the chorus. The chorus is like, it's like some words, but not very many words in the verses, but it gets
words,
the chorus,
the and there's like words, three the better. Words. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, what do you think that is?
Well.
Fix it.
I've thought about it a lot.
You asked the right guy.
But I actually was thinking about this the other day, and this is kind of jumping a little bit, but I want to this year try not to disparage like churches and why they're bad. But anyway, I could do better than do that. That said, the reason that the church songs are simple is because they're boring and they're lazy and they don't do better.
Well, I think, which is weird because I'm the one who's crude and pessimistic, I think it's much more simple. It's because people are simple and we have short attention spans. And if you want to memorize something, make it simple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't like how companies do it. Here's an acronym to explain why you should be safe. That's dumb, but that's the mindset, I think.
Well, it's
the same
also,
mindset that dictates that dogma in work. It's
sure.
The same mindset that dictates the dogma in churches. Simpler is better. We want to drill this into people's heads.
That, and it's easier, like it's more approachable. It's easier to remember and duplicate. Like anybody can play church songs because they're like three chords. Then you just do them in a row. And so everybody can, you know, and that way it's kind of a good thing. If you want the most people to be able to access it, then, you know, you've done a good thing.
Makes it more accessible. That's the optimistic way of saying it.
That's the best way I can come up with. Yeah. I don't feel that way about it, but I'm trying not to just like dump on it. It's like, there's a reason for it. There's the utilities and that it's approachable and easy to duplicate.
Well,
that's also really bad though.
As a challenge to you, because you're trying to be not as harsh or whatever you want to say, what do you think the best utility of present day church is? That is to say, what's the most thing that most people could get out of it in a normal church today, despite how much of
easy answer. And it's community.
Okay, well,
that's the best.
What does that look like? Just showing up one day and maybe saying hello to one person who's next to you, and then you go home like, I got somebody's face and name today.
Sure.
Does that count as community?
No, I don't think so.
Then what do you think community is?
You actually brought this up a couple weeks ago, and I've been thinking about it too. And it's, you said, what is community except for tribalism in a different word?
There's so, my pessimistic side.
Right. But I thought about that. I thought that was interesting. And I think that that's kind of correct. It's like you have to have an in-group because there's only so much proximity you can have to things. You only have so much
shit you can give.
Right.
What's that number? 110? There's only about 110 people that you can know by face and name. And after that, you can't. Certainly there is a limit. I'm sure it's different for everybody, but there is a limit to how many shits you can give. That's the crudest way of saying it. Mm. There's for example, in an actual tribe, you knew everybody in the tribe. Uh-huh. Tribe might have been, but then cities, however big that might be, you're never gonna, and you don't care to know. So there is an X amount, and mm-hmm. I think that's one reason why small churches are better. An yeah. optimal community or group is one that you can care about, and that's why I don't like, well... One reason I don't like social media mm-hmm. is the opposite of that. Anyway, I want to get into that. We could, but if you have more thoughts about answering my question, which I guess you kind of did, what's the main benefit that most people could get out of church today? Mm-hmm. Community. Let's make it just a tiny bit more crude.
Before you do that, can I just kind of branch off of the other thing?
Sure.
So you said what you can get out of church, and that also brings up, if I provided the answer that I think is the correct answer for that question, the community is the good thing you can get out of it. Now, what are the things you can get out of it? There are other things you can get. You can get a narrative. You can get a story. Now, I don't think it's the best narrative, and I don't think it's the best story, and, you know, that's just my opinion. I don't know if, that's just like my opinion, man, but like, I don't know if that's the actual, I think that the story that many churches tell is like true in a sense, but they like translate it weird. And so like, I feel like someone else should have the responsibility of telling that story better.
Who do you think that is?
I don't know.
Well, I would say this. I don't think when you say story, I think I know what you mean, but I would, if it is what I think it means, what I would say is a church can never tell you the story as well as you can experience it. Mm-hmm. You have to experience that story. And I guess that story is our relationship with God. So the church can't make you love God or necessarily point out to you why God is good to you. You have to see that for yourself. Mm-hmm. If that's what the story is.
Well, sure. That's one thing. I mean, I've used story really generally and broadly. It's more that they like a framework. It's like, this is how your life should look kind of thing. And I think a lot of them provide that kind of a thing, except for, I don't know that that's the best framework. And I shouldn't just say that about all churches because they're all super different. Mm-hmm. There's like a function to what a church is like supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it provides some of those functions. Unfortunately, like it's just been shaped weird, and like culturally what a church has become is not really a church. It's like a shell. And it's like, it's like when you come up with a procedure when you first start a business. And then you've always had that procedure, but it's kind of a garbage procedure. And why we're maintaining this procedure, nobody knows.
I think present day church, for the most part, is to what church should be, as social media is to community. It's kind of fictitious, superficial, surface level, not wholesome. It's trying or pretending to be, but just isn't. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're gonna harp on the church one way or another, but just to make it interesting, I was gonna try to go with your challenge to yourself of not thinking negatively about it.
Dumping on it.
We've dumped. So let's try to hop on the other side.
Yeah.
Let's try to scoop some poop on the church lawn.
There was something that somebody told me when I was trying to get back into going to church and stuff, and what someone encouraged me to do is they said pay attention to everything that's said. And if you learn one thing new, one, or you think of one thing in a different way than you did before, then it will have been a good service. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that seems like an okay enough measure.
It's a low bar, but it is a measurable metric of success or whatever. So sure, let's go for that.
Sure. So, and that has happened many times, I'm sure, where I've gone and I've heard something and I'm like, oh, that's an interesting new analogy to talk about an idea that I've known for a while. Or maybe it's a completely new framework to seeing things, which is great. Perspective is a good thing that church offers. I'm now thinking of like several instances where I went to a church and I left with literally nothing new, which was super frustrating because it's like you had one job to do. But I also, you know, I'm such a like philosophical smart guy. So it's pretty church. Tough for them. I'm just kidding. A lot.
No, I've had both as well. Or usually, yeah. I remember in the later days, it was a lot of, I know, we know. But then I remember being most pleased and happy with being there when it's, oh, little angle on the thing. Maybe that's what, that's like us trying to figure out what sermons are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I think I would kind of agree with that idea as far as it should teach you something new, even if it's one new thing. That's what a sermon should do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just perspective. Maybe you know the stories, but give me another way to approach it or something else to get out of it. That's what I think a good sermon or pastor does.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I've seen different pastors. I like the ones who are actually smart. It's cool to get a person's perspective on a story because you can get that from anybody. But then I've seen like a really intelligent person who speaks like multiple languages and understands Hebrew and what the actual words mean, for example, in his perspective. It's more intellectual, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
But if that's what a sermon's supposed to be, yeah. Jumping
can
back.
Can we keep going with the pastors or...
We can. Like that. I'll remember. It's not a big deal. I'm literally going to different rooms in the church.
Yeah, yeah.
Different community functions or whatever. But go ahead. I can remember all that. It's
So there are obviously different kinds of pastors, and you kind of alluded to that. You like the type of pastor who's smarter than you, who has something to teach.
Which is generally
you.
Smart person.
Right, right. And I'm totally with you there. I would love that if like the teacher, like that's what a pastor is supposed to be, is the teacher. If you'd like it if the teacher was a competent teacher. You want to learn
from somebody
teacher.
Who's smart. That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Now you can have teachers that are reading the book along with you and then giving you the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Whoop-de-frickin-do. Mm-hmm. That's what most teachers are. But every once in a while, like, you should be a teacher because you're smart. Yeah. And you know this stuff. And
so it'd be interesting to determine what the metric of a good pastor is. I think it's probably directly correlated to what is a good teacher.
Mm.
And to me, a good teacher is one of two things. They actually teach you information. That's one measure of a good teacher. Another measure of good teachers, they make you ask the right questions. Maybe they don't have the answers, but they give you the right questions to ask. I think that's another good teacher. And then another kind of good teacher is one that captures your attention. And it's like, it stays. And then maybe they don't have as much information to show, but you are right there with them in like an emotional fugue state kind of thing. You're like at the same place as they are.
It takes.
And I've experienced all three of those kinds of good pastors. And it's very interesting. Like the kind that I might think regularly is my least favorite kind is that last one. The one who's the emotional fire and brimstone type teacher, but that you just like can't stop watching. And it's very like, have you ever had that kind of a pastor or sit inside of like a service, sat inside of a service like that, where there's just a guy and he's standing there and he's passionate about things. And then he just engages with eye contact and you realize, okay, there's this guy's like, got something right. Now, I don't know what he said exactly, but you know, those like people, they have like weird voodoo magic and
I understand. It's kind of like a confidence in their belief,
mm-hmm.
so that it kind of shows through.
But it's not like fake. I mean, there are fake versions of that too. But unfortunately, there's a lot of fake versions of that where you get these telemarketers who are like so engaging and charismatic.
You meant televangelists, but telemarketer is better.
Oh yeah,
that's what they are. They're marketing something on the telly.
Yep.
So telemarketers.
You know what I mean? Yeah, televangelists. But they just like, they got that part of the game down, but then they don't really say anything and they're all about the money and the guilting people and the stuff.
Yeah.
That's not good. But there are some really genuinely good versions of that.
If we're trying to say what a good pastor is, I don't know, but a good pastor requires several skills, oratory skills, intellectual skills, interpersonal skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's that deeper level? A general
spiritual
skill.
Mm-hmm.
I've known one pastor who basically had it all,
mm-hmm.
but then again, I was a kid at the time, so maybe my perspective isn't as clear as it would have been now. But anyway, yeah, good luck finding all that in a person.
Yeah.
So if we're trying to figure out what makes a good pastor, are we going to say he has to have all those things, or this one skill of all is the most important thing a pastor must need to be a good pastor? Because I don't know if I can put my finger down on anything at all.
Well, how do you determine, I keep going back to the using the teacher analogy. How do you determine a good teacher? Because I think that they're basically the same thing.
You know what? When you say it that way, I mean, I can't disagree. Well, a good teacher is somebody who knows the stuff and cares about you and your ability to get better.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. Most specifically, a teacher wants to see you improve. He wants to see you succeed.
Perhaps it is the best teachers are the ones who are the most of those qualities we talked about, but perhaps you can be a good enough teacher if you just care and you try your best and you don't lie. You know, obviously if a teacher just lied and told bad information, they'd be a terrible teacher. I don't know, but I think that that's an apt analogy. I think a good pastor is just a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I think I might have said this already, but I don't think that they have to be all three of those things that I talked about. I think they could be barely one of them, you know? But I think as long as like they tell the truth and stuff, then that's good. I've seen pastors who were like oratorily not very equipped. They were quiet and reserved, but like what they said was like, this is informative and thoughtful, and I've really gleaned a lot from.
I was gonna say, would you rather hear from a guy who is like, I don't know, not a great public speaker, not stand-up-ish, but really believes in what he's saying and has this conviction and honesty? Or would you rather have a guy who's not flamboyant, but, you know, audacious and has presentation, but it's just salad? You know, I would assume rather hear from the first guy.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that is the most important quality is between those two qualities. I mean, there are other qualities that a pastor kind of needs or should have, but...
I think my favorite pastor I ever had was a guy who was, I've had like three favorites, and my favorite of those three that I can recall, and this is just based on my memory, is one that he was a quieter guy, but he was like really thoughtful and very knowledgeable. And then he was just engaging and silly enough to like be super personable.
Do you want to shout him out?
No.
Why not? He's your favorite.
Well, I don't know if he, I don't know.
Maybe you change your mind.
I want to reserve the right to change my mind if I decide that I have higher values later.
Decide that I don't like him yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm kidding.
I just disparage churches so much that I don't want to just be like, I like this guy.
Yeah,
and then,
I know.
And then be like, but his church sucked, you know? Because that's
all right.
Technically.
Let's move out of the auditorium. We got Sunday school, children's church, general community. I'm picking like sections
Sunday
of
school.
That's where I want to jump to next. Oh, wait, hold on. Sunday school, children's church.
Same thing.
Small group is another one. That's a group, like a Sunday school that meets outside the church. But let's go to let's go to Sunday school. Can I tell a little story? So I don't know what church is like now or what yours was like, but ours was two services, two showings, you might say. Mm-hmm. Pastor gives the same sermon twice a day. During the first service, there would be children's church. And in between those two services, there was Sunday school. So I'd be there all day. I'd do children's church during the first service. Then I'd do Sunday school. And then I'd do the sermon for the second service. So I'd do all of the programs in a day. That was a normal thing. But I always liked... How do I say this? I enjoyed children's church the most, but that's because it was basically play around. Mm-hmm. But I thought that Sunday school was the most important. I thought this is, if there's one thing I should go to today or be involved, it's Sunday school. I don't know if I know why that is. Maybe I've had this thought as I have now, which I just think the smaller group is more important. If you're actually, I don't know, what do you might call that? Interpersonal stuff? Like actual community happens there? Not that it can't happen in a service, but I think that's closer to what church is, because church is not the building, it's the body, it's the people in it, and they have to talk together and work together, and that's the closest representation out of those, you know, things, children's church and whatever, I think that's why it's most important. But now go ahead and give some thoughts on Sunday school.
No, I'm with you there. I was like, functionally Sunday school, first of all, agreeing with you that like it's depending on like the size of the group. It's like when you get a more personal small group, then you can get a lot more of the deep thinking and the intimate stuff that it goes into a spiritual journey done, you know. But I mean, I've been trying to think of the utility in the big churches, and I think that it's sheer, like the sheer size of worshiping with that big of a group together has some like oomph behind it. Going back to Sunday school. Like, I grew up in Sunday school. I've got a bunch of different Sunday schools because we had several different churches. And in most of them, my parents were involved in the Sunday school. Mm-hmm. And my parents are, like, super good teachers. So, they, like, I don't know that I've experienced many bad Sunday schools. They also, specifically because they know how to teach me and they taught me like a lot my whole life, that like I feel like they kind of had like the upper edge on how to make Sunday school like good for me. Now, that said, I've had several Sunday schools where my parents weren't the ones who headed it up, and those ones just felt mostly like play. It was just like doodling and distract the noisy kids because this isn't time for them. This is time for them to shut up and go do fun, eat, feed them all the sweets and get them out of the adult's way while we do the church. Mm-hmm. I think that there's like definitely a way to do the Sunday school with kids, like totally like the right way, exposing them to adult ideas. And
did you have children's church? Because for me, there are different things. Children's church is basically daycare. There was daycare. Then there's children's church. And then there's Sunday school. There's between Sunday school and children's churches. Sunday school is an age similar group, typically 12 plus or something. Children's church is like, I don't know, 6 to 12. And they're all playing. And then they have like a story, you know, but it's generally play. So did you have children's church and Sunday school or just Sunday school?
So you actually have them terminologically differentiated. And
that's why to me, I was bringing that up.
Well, they're just the same thing.
Okay, that's what I thought.
In most people's minds, it's like
Sunday school was more stringent. Like, here's our study.
And I think that's a better differentiation. I think that most people, they're just kind of amorphous, and it depends on the church. Because some churches, like the kids have a strict, this is what we do on Sundays. And some of them, it's just throw them in the play place and let them beat each other up to death.
Yeah.
As far as we're concerned.
Yeah.
A lot of stickers, a lot of coloring and it was always like coloring, like animated cartoon, like Noah's Arks.
Yep.
Every place was Noah's Ark.
Yep.
It was like, how many times are we going to draw this boat? And I think I get why, because there's a bunch of cool animals you can color and stuff. And two of them.
All of the animals, in fact. Right.
All of them. Yeah. There's a bunch of lazy. I kind of get it, because in a lot, most parents are just trying to survive.
And yeah, if you're trying to do stuff,
it's like, please just let us have a little bit of time to go, you know, enact our faith in this way. And so, in some sense, I get it. But
sounds like as regards to you, you're calling it Sunday school. In my head, that's children's church. Unless you want to talk about the actual small groups that meet in church, which is what we called Sunday school.
Well, small groups, I think, are for adults who go and do that their own individual church.
Yeah,
kind of under the umbrella of the whole church.
Small groups is what I call a group that meets outside the church. They go to church if they meet. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I was trying to agree to terms.
I agree to your terms. I'm just letting you know that everybody else doesn't. They kind of, they're all the same thing.
So we'll
thing.
Dispense with the term children's church. You have Sunday school. That's what we're called.
Yeah, we can do both. It doesn't matter.
Whatever. So Sunday school is what I'm trying to get your opinion on. I think that was the most important thing, because it's
what was
not
Sunday
much,
school for you? Was it learning?
Sunday school was, as kids, we get in a group and we do a project, or we not just tell a story, ask the students, Sunday school members, questions, and we have a conversation about whatever the topic is. So it's an interactive mini sermon, which is what I thought was like the best form. And it would really happen in a sermon in one of my churches, but I loved it when the pastor like asked questions like, this is great. And someone like raise your hand, ask a question. This is great. Now I'm engaged because I'm part of this conversation. Anyway, I think that's what Sunday school was for me. And that's why I think it's the best, most interactive. But if we're talking about what a pastor is supposed to be, what do you think Sunday school is supposed to be?
I don't know.
You don't?
No, I haven't put in any mental thought or exercise into trying to fix Sunday school. Because for me, like, I've seen it done well. And what was done well was the things like some people that I knew, including my parents, did. And what they would do is they would try to boil down difficult theological or philosophical ideas and then put them in the framework of their faith in a way that children could absorb. Mm-hmm. And then they would make it fun too. Like my dad, he was really big into animals. He'd bring in animals and he would teach lessons with animals and the kids would be playing with the animals. But then he would either tell like stories from the Bible that had these animals involved, or he would talk about what it takes to care for this animal and how it's similar to people. You know, he would just kind of do that. And my mom would do like so many things to keep kids engaged, but they would teach more complicated ideas than usually kids get exposed to, which to me, that's the goal of adults. It's like, let's spoon feed tough things into them so that they're prepared for the diet of adulthood. I don't know.
But, you know, yeah, let's dispense with children's church for a second, because I think I'm remembering Sunday school. There were a few Sunday schools and they were age bracketed.
Yeah.
Or grade bracketed is the right term.
That's so, usually how they do it.
Right. So that's what Sunday school / children's church is. Children's church is the youngest Sunday school. But as the older you get, the more mature the conversations become. So if you're trying to whatever you just said, you said it pretty well. Uncomplicating complicated ideas for the people. As you get older, the conversations get more deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we can move with that and do a nice jump to small group, because I think small group is Sunday school outside the church, basically, which makes it more personal. And I think it's important, but I think this is probably a subjective thing. It's probably just me, but I think better in spaces. So if I'm sitting at my desk and I want to work, it's the same place I sit and watch YouTube. It's really hard for me to just, but if you clock in at a place and sit at a desk that you could watch YouTube at, but you only work there, that's how my brain kind of works. So for me, I prefer Sunday school because I'm here for this reason, as opposed to having people over at my house where I hang out for small groups. It's not bad. It's just, I think, less dedicated is the word I'll use. So I think Sunday school is better, but small groups certainly has a, but I think they're almost exactly the same. The only thing is there's less of a leader in small group. Small group is typically there's a teacher or a leader there. Small group is there is no leader. We're all on the same level. Anyway, I'm just describing what I think small group is. You can tell me what you think it means or what it should be.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good. There was one small group in particular that we had for that. We went to longer than any other small group. We didn't really do the small group thing a lot growing up, but we did for a while because my parents wanted to get more engaged. And it was one that they had kids. Each of the families had kids roughly our age.
And the kids go play and the adults stay and do small group, right?
Well, they kind of did most things together. They'd have an adult part where they'd send the kids to go do different things and then they'd go do something. But usually the kids were involved in at least a good part of it. And it was, I really liked that format. You'd trade off homes and then, you know, knowing how it is with church families, I'm sure the families would stress out making sure everything's clean before everybody got there and stuff, just, you know, cause presentation and stuff, but then they'd get there and then it was super fun. Like, well, they'd have the serious, maybe half hour where they'd go and they'd have a dedicated scripture that everybody had worked on reading. And then they'd usually, our particular small group, we had a lot of talented musicians, and so they would play music and we'd all sing together.
That's awesome. Stuff.
It was very cool. And, you know, they'd usually prepare snacks. But then after that, a lot of times they'd have game night and they'd basically just combine game night and.
Oh, man, you did it right.
I know that to me, that was like as good as it got.
Sorry, go ahead. You have more.
Now the interesting thing about things like that, where it feels like this feels like it's done right, is almost like when that was happening and everybody was loyally doing that and everyone was like in a really good spiritual place, almost everything that you could throw at the group to try to get things, distractions and stuff happened. Like there would be, there are external forces that were trying to break the group apart. Now for a while it didn't work, but then eventually just life got in the way and people stopped meeting up for different reasons and, you know, atrophy sat in. But for that short while when everybody was really driven to go do this meeting with people, I remember feeling like this is tough. This is a strong group. Anyway, it's one of those, you know, very age old truisms about people trying to do good, is that when you start trying to do good, you know, it's almost as if the universe tries to stop you and you're not just resisting against the force of being better than you used to be, but also the force of everything else trying to stop you from improving. It's very interesting. And I've noticed that happen, you know, usually when improvement happens, things get more difficult to maintain. And that was true for that group as well. Not that they might tell that story differently because every group just, you know, gets apart and stuff. But like, was this true for you? Sunday mornings is when people were the most grumpy before church. Everybody's mad and just, we got to go to church.
As opposed to when midweek, they're gonna be grumpy about going to church. What do you mean?
I mean, like, it's time to go to church. Go, get dressed and do this. And, you know, and for some reason, everyone was just grumpy.
I think I see what you're getting at. there was that agitation, we would call it, but yeah. there was none of that for small group. It's going to be fun.
Right.
People are coming over. Maybe there's a little bit of stress. We got to clean, maybe a little bit, but like,
I don't know. The point I was trying to make is usually when you're trying to do a good thing is when like just the tension of it's almost like there's like a, people have described it as spiritual warfare. It's almost like there are forces out there that are trying to prevent you from entering that space of worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost, and anyway, it's very metaphysical, and I'm talking about things as if they're real and I don't understand them, but I think there's something to that. I think that's true of when you're trying to pursue what's good, there are forces that at least oppose you, and it makes it tougher to go to reach that point.
It's in your freaking nature.
That's the other way to say it. It's like you were designed not to pursue.
But you're not wrong. The forces are out there, and they're in there. They are all around us. So you're not wrong. Sunday school for me, small groups for me. Us kids weren't involved. I don't think at all. It was literally go out in the yard as soon as they show up, and then, hey, we're leaving now, and they call the kids back, and we'd walk through to ask our parents about something, but they're sitting in a circle, and you don't want to interrupt, but like, he hit his head. Okay, I had to say it. No,
just
you're trying to stop yourself?
Yeah.
Man, that was one of the best parts of my childhood. I love small groups for that reason, but it was entirely selfish. There was nothing God-related about it for me. I was a kid who got to play with other kids.
Yeah.
And yeah, we did house hopping, whatever you want to call it. It was rarely at our place, but when it was like, oh, we got to clean this place.
Yeah.
You know, man, that was really fun. I remember car rides to and from those places. Uh-huh. It's the only kind of childhood social interaction I really had because I was pretty sheltered. Anyway, moral of the story is if I'm leaving churches services on the internet, if I'm leaving reviews on their services and I'm looking at small group as a child.
Yeah.
5 stars.
Yeah.
It's the best stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah.
But as an adult, I kind of did it, a young adult. I did it 1 or 2 times and I was like, how do I put this? I'm obviously different than I was then, but as of this moment, this kind of counts as a small group, kind of. The idea about talking about spiritual things or biblical things in a mature way, disagreeing or exploring things. I love that.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of imagine that must have been what it would have been like for your parents to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what small group was, let's literally sit around with a topic in mind of, I don't know, this chapter. I could get behind that. Mm-hmm. Now it takes some discipline to meet and do all that. And the forces working against you.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the idea. Maybe I'm just lazy. I certainly have nothing against it. Heck, I'm more for that than a sermon, I think. Not that sermons are bad. It's like you have to pick one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all the thoughts I have on small group.
I've been in several small groups, or I've at least tried several. And there's a few observations. It's either one, like the older groups, they're either super rigid and like they have to have the structure and like, this is when we pray and this is when we talk about this Bible verse and then we go home. And that's what we do every week. And like that, that doesn't appeal to me. Now there's, on the flip side, there's like the young adult small groups where it's literally just super horny Christians. And I'm saying that extremely literally.
That's funny.
Because here's what happens. It's like, you can tell everyone's trying to do good.
Yeah,
but
I get it.
Everybody's super horny. And so they're all like flirting, but then like, oh, shopping themselves. And it's very weird.
I can kind of picture that. Because I didn't really go. But I knew those kids, right? That age group, like they're 18 and
like
and they're having their own group. Like, you're basically kids in my head, but then I get it.
And I've been to a few of those, especially, you know, the ones that have, you know, both the the sexes in there where it's like, we are the young adults group. And you can tell like half the people there are just there to find like an intimate relationship, which is very like
unfortunate.
I get it though, because it's hard to find the other places.
I get it. I say unfortunate because it's not about right or wrong.
Yeah.
Let's dissect that, but go ahead.
But just now I said, it's hard to find that other places. I had a weird inflection with my word and I wanted to just clarify that I did that. But
wanted to emphasize and redo it.
Places.
Yeah. Okay.
But then here's the one experience that I have that I'll tell about, because it's telling, is I've tried like 3 groups that were for young adults, and the ones where the girls were there and you could tell that they, some of them were just there to find a boyfriend. It was super distracting from the point to the degree where it kind of turned me off to all of them, which is a shame. But you know, I've also kind of tried those groups for the same reason, so I can't criticize it. It's very, I don't, it's very tough balance. I don't know exactly what to
balance
do.
Balance is
it.
A good word, because my only thought on it was you said they were the older small groups and they're too rigid. They have all these restrictions, and then you're going to transition in your story to young groups and they're more chill. That's why I thought you were going, and I'm sure you wouldn't disagree with that. But there's such a thing as not enough structure. Right. You have a bunch of young, like-minded believer people get together. Like, we're going to meet for the purpose of talking about this. But then we're done. You talked about it for like 20 minutes. You want to watch a movie now. You could do that. But then is it, if you spend an hour watching a movie and 20 minutes talking about the chapter, is it small group? A certain amount of structure is required. And I like the idea that there is no leader in a small group. But you kind of have to have somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Keep people on point. And I think it'd be a cool idea if it was democratic and it's, if you're the host today and you're meeting your house, this person is the responsible. All right, let's sit down. Like that would be appropriate. I think that's my own idea.
Anyway,
when you get to that young stuff, I don't think there's enough structure. Who's going to keep structure if half of them are distracted on other things?
It's tough.
So it's balance tough. And I'm fast forwarding to your story. Balance, I think, is key, and that might come with age. We might be at the age where we're the right amount of horny. I want to say it a funny way, and the right amount of shut the fuck up and tell me what this verse means.
Right,
read the Bible. Seriously, yeah. Shut up. I can see you giving eyes at him.
Right,
some what this says.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but I also want to be fair, just to everyone, because all of them, because I'm sure I was doing the same terrible stuff. At
I would never seem innocent to that. I just made the joke,
like making jokes. Like I would be sitting there, like, and we'd be talking, and we'd be serious for parts, and we'd be goofing around for other parts, and I liked that part of it, but there was a whole lot of sexual tension, and they just ignore the fact that that's the case there, and I wish it was more acknowledged, like maybe, hey.
Balance.
You know, hopefully we can find, you know, a squeeze here or two, but we're here for God. So maybe
I think there is a balance, and I think you can't have all one and not the other either way. For example, you're all people. That's kind of what community is. If you're going to ban finding for example, your wife at a small group, that kind of defeats small group in that there's no interpersonal. I don't know. There's a balance, whatever. So how would you rate small group?
I like it.
I'm for it.
I really like it. It's my favorite version of that kind of community of church. Community.
How about this though? How would you feel about, because I don't know how I feel about it. What do you feel about small group entirely outside of church? There is no church going for you. You just meet with some believers, similarly minded friends. You talk about this once a week. I certainly don't think that's a bad thing.
I love it. But I would love it, but nobody does it.
But nobody does it.
No, that's not true. I think a lot of people do it, but it's really tough to advertise
that. I was going to say, how would you do that? You'd have to have, the group would have to come together from the church, right? Originally. But then at best, one of them might invite a friend who's outside the church to a small group. That's not normal. You invite them to the church typically. The idea of small group is it's church in the home. Yeah. Anyway, again, I'm sure you feel the same way. I'm all for having a small group and never going to church. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But at the same time, it's like, then if you're going to commit to small group, why couldn't you go to church? It's kind of a double-sided thing. I can't reconcile one with the other is all.
I'll tell you what I think. This is, to me, if I could organize my own church life, this is how I would do it. I would have a church, a big church, maybe huge church, but it's only there. The only purpose for it is worship services. And then I would have the worship services not be three chord songs with three letters in the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
It would be these worshipers, they work on their craft tirelessly through the week, and they make their song intricate and melodically beautiful and something that people can feel that spiritual connection to God with, and also it'd be a big sacrifice for the worshipers. It's like we've spent job. This is our job to provide this place, this sanctuary where you take a huge group of people and then we worship God in the very best way we can. And everyone's focus there is worship.
We're jumping now, by the way, from small group to music.
This is just me.
I forgot about the music part of church, worship. We're going to call it worship.
Okay, but I'm going to keep finishing with my perfect church situation. Okay. So that's what the big church is for. It's for worshiping with people. And then you can, after the worship service, you can do the shaking hands and the hugging and then being a community for a little bit. But then people go home. And then I think the where the teaching should happen is in small groups. I really think that that's the case.
Outside of the church.
I don't, I mean, I get the reason like a, one pastor in front of 1,000 people can be useful, but there's mm-hmm. there's no one lesson that's, there's no lesson that you can tell 1,000 people that will be useful to even half of them. Mm-hmm. It might be useful to a few of them, but that's really like what people need to know is more on an individual level anyway, yeah. that you could focus on those kind of, you could focus on those lessons in a smaller group because you can give people their individual attention, but you can't do that in a group of 1,000 people. You can teach broad things and maybe there's utility to that, but I just don't see it.
This is, my brain's just jumping. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
What if church is like, whoops, that's the wrong button. What if church is like a game, a video game, and the people in it are the players of that game, and the small group are a group of people that you've agreed to play with to try to get better at the game, and the small group of the people are like, let's play together. I like you guys enough, or we care enough to go outside of the work building to go do it. And the pastor is basically a video talking about strategies and tips and tricks. And you know most of it. And like, this is the least interesting part of the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's a one-sided thing. I'm just watching. I'm not interacting with this game. That's the whole point of a game, mm-hmm. is to interact. Now, that's not a great analogy, but came to my head. I was like, oh, it's kind of like,
yeah,
that's
makes
why
sense.
That's why the pastor part isn't so great or isn't the most, it defeats the purpose almost.
Yeah.
Church is community. Gaming is interactive. Mm-hmm. If you don't interact, ugh. Now, it's not like there's no place for it, but I'm going to have to say without thinking about too hard that the sermon is the least important part.
Now, I will say this about the pastor. You said it yourself. You can only, whatever the number is, 110 or something.
Someone measured it. I don't know.
I do believe that so many pastors, they believe, or I don't want to make it seem like they're ignorant, but they Oof. Really work hard, like getting to that individual level with a lot of their people. Mm-hmm. My whole thing is you cannot physically do that with everybody in a church if you have 300 people there. Yeah. You don't have time in the week. 300 people in 7 days. There's no way you could get personal yeah. time with them in a month. 300 is, you have 30 days in a month. You could see 10 people a day.
You would memorize them the next day. You would know those 10 people.
Maybe you could, but then that'd be all you were doing all the time. But after 30
days, you'd forget those first 10. There's no way. Whatever.
There's no way. Then that's only 300. Uh-huh. We're not talking like 3,000, 10,000.
So as the church size grows and sermon grows from like 5,000 people, it yeah. becomes even that much less interpersonal.
Right.
And more...
The pastor's job, just right. It's an impossible ask for pastors. It's like, go ahead and be one of the most important and like integral, like interpersonal teacher type position jobs with this many people and teach people on Sunday. It's like, there's no one who can do that. I think it's setting up pastors for failure. Now that said, I think a lot of them do a really good job
mm-hmm.
with like 20 of those people, you know, like 20 to 50 people, maybe. Maybe they're working super hard all the time, but they're not getting to everybody. It's just impossible.
Mm.
So I think the way to avoid that is focusing on the fact that, well, there's utility in worship when there's a bunch of people. It's this giant group of people getting together, doing one thing in unison. There's something mm. really cool about that. That's why a lot of ceremonies and stuff are so like, they're lauded greatly in culture, all these, or in cultures across the world where people get together to do a thing together. I think that should be the worship part. And I think that it should be more than like really simple songs. It's like, we shouldn't get together.
Well, let's go to worship now.
Right.
What do you go on about worship? I will then ask questions about it that I think okay. are important, but you were talking about it quite a bit, but keep going.
So
you were on the vein about how songs should be worked on by people who give all their time and talent to make something beautiful.
Maybe not all, but or, certainly
more. They're not three verses. So talk more about.
Okay,
your opinions on worship music.
So if what worship is, it's supposed to be a ceremony, all celebrating the same thing. That's what I believe it's for. It's like, we're here to celebrate uh-huh. God in this scenario. Uh-huh. That's what church is. So if you don't offer a dumpy sacrifice in a celebration, you mm-hmm. offer the best you've got. Like, that's not a good ceremony if it's not a sacrifice. So
all we have are streaked pigeons.
Yeah.
We have the least minimum...
Yeah,
whatever.
That were factory grown. Mean. Yeah, exactly. Literally, factory yeah. grown. We play everything factory on a loop.
Dot streaked and spotted pigeons. Yeah.
The unfortunate thing about that complaint I have about worship services that I did a lot of time with one of my good friends and one of my mentors in the music industry, and he's a producer and a mixer, and he does work with churches a lot of it. And I've seen how hard he works to make it good, to do a good product. And as, and there are several people on worship bands that do the same kind of thing. They work hard. That said, it's almost as if one person offers like everything they've got, and then everybody else in the worship service kind of offers nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like somebody's like working really hard to do their very best job of creating a good sacrifice, but not the whole. And like, you can make a really good thing if everybody sacrificed everything they had or everything they were willing to, but that's not the case. Now, I think that I'm sure there are plenty of worship bands that exist that they do exactly that. They master their craft and they make sure they have the best songs and they write them and they put the time and the effort to layer the chords in such a way that it's complicated and also simple enough for people to follow. And they really balance that. And those, I bet that those bands see a lot of success and a lot more involvement in the worship service. Now, it's kind of bolstered by the fact a pastor has to get up there afterward. And I just don't understand that. I don't get why. Anyway, I think the function of church should be we worship. That's what we do with the big group. And then you go and learn from a smaller group.
Well, I agree with the idea we're about worshiping. We've agreed to be here to celebrate and dedicate together.
Uh-huh.
That's fair. I'm interested in how complicated isn't the right word, intricate should the songs be? Because I agree the songs are too simple, and that's not because we're highly intelligent and we understand music. It's because they're lazy. I understand that completely. And I think a lot of people could agree. These songs are lazy. Very similar But clearly, we're not going to make a song that's orchestrically complicated and there's just verses and then they Why change. Not? Because you just said we need to make it easy for people to follow. Like, okay, I get that too. I think there's a balanced answer. I don't know what it is. What do you think the level of complication for worship music should be?
It's entirely possible that you can write a song that's lyrically easy to follow and melodically easy to follow. In super intricate chord wise, that's what music is you can.
So at the minimum, you're saying they need to try just a little bit goddamn harder.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like bare
that's
minimum.
All we're saying. We're not saying we know how complicated, but like step it up because you're way at the bottom.
I've seen people do really good worship work. I've seen people, I know my parents wrote worship songs and they'd sing them and they were the best worship songs the church did. And it was because these individuals knew they knew their audience. First of all, we know that these people are musically smart enough to follow this stuff. And also the words when meant something more in the small culture that is our church than they would in most churches. I think that, I remember when I was working with that guy, I was working with him at his church and we were doing the practices where the worship band would come in and they'd do their practice on Thursday. I remember that they would play a few songs and then one of them they played, it was like, I really like this song. This is a decent worship song. And he goes, yeah, he wrote that. I was like, there it is. Yeah, I knew it. Yeah. It's because he took the time to like make it his voice. And like, this is his and his band's influence on this song. And you could tell that was their best song. I was like, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you can tell when you have made your own offering and it's presented.
That'd be a nice start. Like how do I put this? Most often you'll see the same song across different churches, copied and pasted.
Yeah.
That bothers me. I can't say it's wrong, but like, come on, you are a community. Why don't you, as your own community, come up with make your own offering?
Uh-huh.
That'd be cool. So I appreciate it. And I've seen it when like the worship leader, I guess that's the title, worship leader makes his own song. I may not like it, but I'm like, I've had a mostly pessimistic view toward it. On the optimistic side, I can say, I appreciate that you gave of this. Mm-hmm. But when I look at it, I don't know if it's just unfounded. Often when I'd see that kind of thing, I go, this is just somebody lauding himself. Look at what I made. Look at me.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it. And maybe, again, maybe it's unfounded. And he was like, no, I really love and I did this because I think I just never got that.
Yeah.
And that's probably on me. But
so there was, to using that same example of that guy who wrote that song, he was good. He did good. He did what I consider the right things and the wrong things the same exact night. It was very funny when it happened because the thing that happened almost directly after they played that song is they played another song that was way more simple and it relied on the tracking and the pads and stuff. And I was like, I get it. This church tracks. It uses the tracks because it adds layers and dimension and it makes the song sound more produced, which is nice, but it's a little lazy. Anyway, one of the bandmates at some point in the song, he was playing along with the track and it was a boring song that everybody plays, and he went at the end of the song, he goes, hey, I have an idea for the bridge. I've been working on this thing and it sounds like this and stuff. And I was wondering if we could do that. And he goes, let me hear it with the song. And they kind of
during
it
a service of, or
during the practice.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Right. Sorry, so the same practice that I was talking about before where I heard the song. I was like, this is a good song.
Anyway, go ahead. Song.
And the worship pastor said, okay, let me hear it in context. And he played the chord in context and he goes, okay, stop. And he goes, I like it, but it conflicts with the track. So we're going to have to get rid of it. And it bothered me so bad because I was like, you're going to get rid of the good sounding thing that mm-hmm. your guy made mm-hmm. to follow the track of literally the most boring version of this sound. Like you lost the thing that worship is supposed to be. You lost the accent that this guy who wants to worship wanted to provide this song to make it his own.
I want to agree. I'm trying to, in my head, argue for both sides. I agree because I think that is inspired creativity in his name. I mean, shoot, that's what God loves is when we make things, yeah. I think, and then we offer it to him. I think that's like, you can't really beat that as far as worship. The other side is we need to consider all the dumb sheep.
Yeah.
Like,
I get that too.
I get it, but it's also, that's me saying it in a negative way. We mm-hmm. have to consider everybody. It's not just about us. Yeah.
I as an experiment, after he said that, I went to Isaac and I the guy who I was learning under, and I basically said, could we just turn the track off? It sounds good. And he's like, yeah, I think we could. I don't think they need to use tracks at all, but they, you know, he says that he wants to do that, and it's nice in case somebody messes up. And I was like, okay, that's nice too, but I don't know. That bothered me bad.
Yeah.
It was like, man, this guy had, you know, I don't know. It was something about, he figured out a way to make it better. It was a jazzier chord. It was cool. It sounded amazing in context with the vocals, but the pad that was underneath, it just, all you need to do is turn it off at that part, and it would have sounded just
I get it.
Great. And it sounded great. I was like, man, that's a bummer. That's let me replace this organic, natural, good cow that you came and sacrificed at the altar with the Tyson chicken out of the plastic that everybody gets. I don't know. Just bugged me.
The problem with that, you see, is it would have taken some effort to make that work.
Yep.
I understand that.
Right. So there is a balance at the end of the day. The thing that I would have those type of worship services consider is if the function of this is to provide the best thing you can, that's what it's for. And you kind of need to get rid of the practicality thing. It's like, this is what it's for. Anyway, that's my thought on worship services.
I don't know if I have any other original thoughts on worship music. I think it's good. It's like you said, it's a cool thing that people come together and they do this. I have a similar problem with it that you do. It's just samey and lazy and minimum effort. And it's like, this is insulting.
Yeah. Just so much reverb
to all of us and to God.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, church isn't a business where you clock in and clock out. Yeah. And church isn't a factory where you pump people in and put them out the meat grinder. I hate that mentality, that commercialization, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, let's jump to another aspect of church. How about, well, I don't want to jump to a room. We kind of talked about it, but it's just a question / idea. How big or small do you think a church should be? Do you think there should ever be a limit? This is the biggest mega church in the world, 50,000 people. Would you say at some number, this is 1 million people in one place? Is it too much? No, I'm going to say no, because to the extreme, if the whole world, as they should and will one day, say that God is Lord, Lord is God, I'm not going to say it's too many people. But at the same time, I want to say smaller is better. Like if I had it my way, and churches do this sometimes, if they grow too much, they split and they make more churches, which I think is correct. But I don't have a limit.
Most things, it depends. It depends
in the
on
middle.
It depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to have a huge church and just entertain people for 3 hours, then it would do you a good. It would do you good to have a huge service. Now, I don't think that that's what the goal should be. If the goal is we genuinely want to nurture spiritual mm-hmm. relationships in this with God, mm-hmm. with the Christian God, then I think it's not in your best interest to have a huge church, because you can't nurture relationships individually after a certain point. You have so many hours in the day. Mm-hmm. If your goal is to create a worship environment where the most amount of voices possible can lift up their voices in praise, mm-hmm. then it maybe a big service is good. Mm-hmm. I think that there's utility in huge worship services.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really good when there's a whole room of people all focused on one thing. It's kind of magical in a weird way.
Yeah, I was trying to change my perspective. That's what concerts are like. I was going to, not far from where I was going, I was trying to change my perspective on it because I'm really pessimistic, and I was thinking inside of a building, they're all doing this. It's really factory, whatever you want to call it. But imagine an outdoor service thing where it's a church are performing live out somewhere and then people can come out. It's just a field full of people. That's really cool. What's the difference if there's a roof over them or not? So I shouldn't care. Concert, what you said. Okay, yeah.
For all intents and purposes, I believe concerts are worship services.
You mean not church? No, concerts.
I mean any concert. Worship.
Well, yeah. Then what are they worshiping?
The
band?
The artists.
Yeah, I think that's a problem I have with worship is it's typically... I feel, and like I said with the guy, worship leader who made his own song, he's like, worship me or look at me. That's what I feel like with these productions sometimes. Mm. Sometimes they're not just lazy. They're not humble.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is. I can't point to what the fault is. It's just a feeling.
Yeah.
But that's a big problem I have with worship.
Yeah, there's just like, I legitimately, when people were talking about like rock stars and how they'd just get super high before they'd perform, or they would like it would really mess up their psyche, to me, it makes total sense. Because basically for all intents and purposes, what they're doing when they go out there and they perform for a bunch of people that came to see them perform is you are the recipient of a deity-like worship service.
Yeah.
It's like they've come to you and it's all of a sudden you have to become something bigger than you actually are. And to do that, you need to take drugs because you're just functionally not able to handle that.
I know
it's such a euphoric high.
I know we're going from church just a bit. I'm going to take it just a bit further. I've had that fear or concern with if ever I had to give like a public speech or something, or people came there to see me for something, I was not like, man, I have a moral problem with that. Like how many people are supposed to put their eyes on me and dedicate their time to me like I'm important? And then how am I going to demand their time when I speak? And then to take it to the extreme, they're worshiping me. I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
But there certainly is an acceptable middle ground. For example, like a worship leader in the band, they're not there to be worshipped, presumably, but they could be. Mm-hmm. So how do you humble yourself? I don't know. But if that's your position, if that's your job, like the pastor, you know, not like he's there to be worshipped necessarily, but you have to be, you're a servant. You are one of the people. That's true. And I think that we talked about this like a week or two ago. I have a problem with moral authority or authority over people. And that's just true for any position you have,
mm-hmm.
whatever. I took it too far.
And I also don't want to just say that anybody who goes up and performs in a concert is being worshiped.
No.
I think that something is being worshiped in every performance or concert that there is. I think a lot of times concert, what people are worshiping is the music. It's mm-hmm. what they're doing is it's like, we are here to celebrate this thing that was created. Maybe it was created by the person on stage, but even the person on stage, when they reenact it with this group of people, it's not because for some of them, it's not because they are so full of themselves that they want all the attention on themselves. It's to celebrate the fact that they put this time in creating this music. It's worshiping the fact that this was made and people love it. It's the artist who paints something in the museum and then they have their museum showcase where everybody gets to show. And, you know, there's plenty of applause for the person who made it, but mostly people are there to appreciate the art.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. So thankfully it's not just like the pure sensation of worship me. Now I believe in some cases with rock stars who were literally the reason that people came to go to these shows, it was about them. So uh-huh. It was maybe a little too much for them to handle is my theory. I don't know. Uh-huh. That's just an interesting little sidebar to what we were talking about with churches.
Well, I can't think of another room in the church. I just put the whole size of the church as an idea, like an extracurricular activity type of a question. I don't know about.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other aspect of the church that you want to
define? I was going to ask you just because I was curious and we kind of brushed on it, but like the whole idea that when you go to church as a kid, I don't know if, I mean, like it's certainly true of people that whatever you're like, you tend to attract things similar to that. And I don't know if it was just cause I was like a bad kid. I mean, I don't want to say I was a bad kid, but I was, I don't know if it was just cause I was a bad kid, but did you like did you find that often church was the place that you ended up doing bad stuff, for example?
Well, only insofar as church was the only place I went.
Right, so
that was the only place bad things could happen. It wasn't because
if you did it at home, it'd be not a big deal because it's at home or whatever, or maybe you'd be dealt with by a parent. But no, when you go to church,
I can't say so. I don't think I was duplicitous or had double standards. For example, shut up was like a curse word. You can't say that as a kid in my house. I never said that in church to another kid. Maybe it's because I thought the standards my parents had applied for everybody and everybody was the same. But I can't say I would laugh at the bad kids. I would find amusement in what they did. For example, bad kids, right?
Right.
All in good fun. But if a parent or an adult saw this, they would stop it kind of behavior. For example, I thought it was the funniest thing. Bigger kid grabbed a smaller kid who's willing in this. Picks him up and the bigger kid goes, wall check, and he throws the kid at a wall. And it was like a drag curtain type of a wall where it's collapsible. It's pretty tough, but it's flexible. Uh-huh. Throws a kid in this wall check, and you smile. and I'm like just standing back smiling, and he picks him up, does again, wall check, and then just, you know, that kind of behavior.
Yeah,
I would never do that because I'd get in trouble. It's not bad. We're all participating in this. We're not damaging anything. Hilarious. But I never became that person. So... Uh-huh. I don't know. Did you throw kids in the walls at church?
That'd be the kind of thing I would do.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought you meant by bad. It's not like you're actually bad.
Depends. Because, I just remember, I don't know. I just feel like, I think it's because of who I am. I think it's because I was a bad kid. Yeah. But it would be like I remember one time we went down to, Arizona or something. I think it was Arizona. And my parents said, I don't know if they made the skit or if they were in it. Either way, they were in it in some measure. There was a song that would play and they would enact the prodigal son story. And we went to Arizona to do it for some reason. So we drove overnight and we were there for the day. And I remember there was a few kids there. Some of the other parents that were involved, they had their kids there that came down with us were there. But also there were some kids at the church that we went to. And I remember there was this is just one example of the kinds of things that I'd get myself into, but there was a little girl there and it was our eyes met and we knew, we're the bad kids. So let's go do bad stuff. And I think we ended up going and hiding in this coat jacket. And she was we were kissing on each other and stuff. And we were this is so bad, but we love doing bad stuff. And so then we go do other things and forget about that. And then we'd get distracted, cause kids, but I don't know. I just felt like that was the case everywhere.
You felt like that was the appropriate environment where you could get away with and test the limits of your badness.
Yeah,
I get it.
Maybe it's just because there's people there.
I get it. Basically, the line is pushed there because there's literally more room, not just physically, but with the people around it, there's more room to push the
boundaries. You know what? The more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm just sounding like I was raised a conservative child that is dispositionally liberal. And so I was also homeschooled. So when I finally did get out and stuff on the weekends, when I saw other kids, was my chance to go do things that a, free kind of kid would go try. And it wasn't all bad. It was just
things you wouldn't have done.
Exploratory.
I get it.
I'm now realizing, I think that's probably more what it was. It was my disposition bursting out of the, finally other people to be bad with. I don't know.
Yeah, just dispositionally, I was not that. So
yeah, no, you probably
at best I could find amusement in watching other people do the bad things. I wouldn't scold them and say get in line. I'm kind of in the middle. I won't cross over.
Yeah.
Typically, but I'll appreciate it. I guess.
I have another example how I was bad or the kinds of things I would do. I heard a neighbor kid say something bad, it was a bad word or, talking about sex in some gross way or something. And I didn't bring it up for weeks. I just kind of forgot about it, but I got to church. I was like, I'm going to go tell kids about this thing I learned. And so I was I was going to kids and being hey, I heard this. What do you think of that? I don't know. It's just very weird how church was the place where I heard this. So you want to say that with me, I don't remember exactly what it was, but then I got in trouble and the little girl said that you said this or the little boy heard you say this and we don't say that. It's I got in big trouble. I was embarrassed and stuff, but I don't know why church was always the place where I felt like I did the worst.
Where else
things.
Are you going to do it?
I don't know. Home.
No, besides home and church, where are you going to go physically? That's my deal. It's insofar and as the fact that there was no other place for me to go, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess anyway, that was
we
because...
just fixed church, so
yeah,
get on it.
Well, I feel a lot better now knowing that I was the only bad kid. Yeah. I was hoping that you'd be like, I did bad stuff too.
Sorry, I wouldn't lie.
No, I would because I'm a bad kid. No, I'm kidding. All right, well, we talked about it again. We've talked about church before.
Yeah, but this was a different one. Before it was what's wrong with the church, and this time was more specifically... How we define church? What?
I don't know.
I don't know. It was this. It was exploring church.
Pastors.
Maybe we should call it exploring church. That'd be a good title because we're really talking about through it and defining it in good and bad.
Okay.
I'd call it exploring church.
I'm good with it. We've done church before, but thanks for.
It sounds like hit noises, like in a game.
Stop.
It's like Undertale. That's what it sounded like.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Thank you for listening, listeners.
Yeah, do it.
Jeez.
Stop!
You're getting killed in the game.